Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you so much, listeners, for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I have to tell you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. And we couldn't do Startup Hustle without them. So today we have with us a phenom, and I'm going to have so much fun with this conversation. When we were doing our prep work and pre-work and kind of chatting, just had an amazing time talking about the different things that we could discuss on the show. But we're going to be talking about diversity and inclusion at work with Denise Hamilton, who is CEO of Watch Her Work. And so glad to have you with us today, Denise. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
I know. This is going to be amazing. Let's hop right into it. I do have to apologize. We were having a little bit of technical difficulties on the front end, so we're running a couple minutes late. Please forgive us, but it is well worth it. It's going to be worth the wait, I promise. So Denise, why don't we go ahead and just jump right into kind of your background. Like, tell us a little bit about you and tell us about Watch Her Work.
Sure. So I have been in corporate America for more than a few years, let's say that. It's been a while, but just over 25 years of experience, just leading teams, leading people, running divisions, and just understanding like how work works, right? And because I'm the only woman or the only African American in so many situations, I was constantly asked, can I pick your brain? Will you be my mentor? Can I take you to lunch? I mean, literally, I could have gone to lunch 11 times a day. And it just occurred to me, like, this is crazy. Like, this small group of women that are the tip of the spear have now been put in charge of equality, right? Like, our job to really be training the next generation and developing them and giving them the skills that they need for success. And I was like, this is not sustainable. Like, I would talk to my friends in my cohort, other female leaders, and they would say, I don't even have time to see my own kids. Like, this is just a lot. So it occurred to me, like, there's got to be a way to use technology to solve this problem. So we did. We turned on the camera and we started filming. We filmed executives and thought leaders and
still there?
Yeah, I don't know where I lost you.
Okay. Well, so you were interviewing executives and thought leaders on camera.
Yes. And just capturing their stories from all walks of life, answering questions like, how do you ask for a raise? And how do you tell your boss you're pregnant? What do you do if a client hits on you? How do you negotiate severance? All of these things that are just not intuitive. Like, somebody has to teach you how to do them. right? And because, you know, so everybody wants a mentor, but so few people actually have one. So we wanted to not only scale mentorship, but we also wanted to democratize access. Right. Just because you're born in Itzbitz, Iowa, or you grow come from a low income background, or because you are from a different culture, or maybe you're an immigrant, like that doesn't mean that you can't be the next amazing Fortune 500 CEO. Right. Yeah. We have to have a mechanism to train and develop everyone. We've all seen these programs in our organizations of like, you know, the emerging leaders and the talented whatever, like the handpicked next leader group. Women can't afford that. We need to develop everyone. Everyone needs to get a shot and a bite at that apple. And so we wanted to create this huge library of advice. Yes. And so now we have about 7,000 videos. And it's just, it's amazing. Yeah.
That is so many videos. Like, I almost feel like that would be kind of overwhelming. Like, how do you have all of that information organized?
It's what we just throw them in buckets in the categories. And, you know, yeah. Found out yesterday that you're pregnant. You go to the pregnancy category and you can watch every video, every title, depending on what's interesting to you and what's not. Yeah. If you're going through a divorce, same deal, and just kind of enjoy it. And it's really funny to watch, like, people just kind of eat them like potato chips. Like they eat one after the other after the other. It's really great.
Well, and so what I think is really cool about what you're doing is so in addition to being a powerhouse resource, you're also kind of humanizing some of this knowledge share. You know, you're putting a face, like by doing it video style, you're putting a face and you're putting a human behind this advice that you're getting, which I think is super cool. And I imagine that must be a large part of the appeal. You know, I'm getting great information, but I'm also understanding a little bit more about a female leader who's an expert in this space. So that's really, really cool. So
add to that it's different women, right? Yeah. Because I may be an extrovert and you're an introvert. We're not going to approach a problem the same way.
Right.
So it's really beautiful to have people from all walks of life give advice on the same subject. So you can discern which one can I pull off. Literally, which one can I follow?
Right. Like what might work for you isn't necessarily going to work for me. But the point is we have a multitude of solutions available to us to pull from. No, I love that. And I also, I have to tell you, I am at some point probably going to steal the term democratize access. I think that is just so beautifully put. I'll credit you. I'll be like, Denise Hamilton said this, but I just think it's super cool. But no, I think that that's amazing. So you said something, you mentioned mentorship a couple of times, and I wanted to circle back to that because I do think that it's really important in particular, you know, it, often for women to find mentorship, and it can also be more difficult for women to find mentorship because when you get up to the higher levels of management and leadership, you often see fewer and fewer women, first of all. But then one of the things that we talk about a lot at Innovate Her KC is how, you know, with the advent of like the Me Too movement and, you know, holding people accountable for their behavior, really, you started to, I think there was a Pew Research study that came out that said something like 60% of male management and leaders are hesitant to take on a female mentee because they're scared. And so you take an already small existing pool and you make it smaller. So I wanted to talk to you about mentorship, and we'll dive more deeply into watch our work a little bit later, but tell us a little bit about, you know, why do you think mentorship is important?
It's essential because you need somebody to show you the path, right? Explain where the bodies are buried and where the secret hidden codes are. It's just like getting a code for a video game. So I think it's really important to have someone to help you navigate. It's not intuitive, right? Navigating upper leadership and or problem solving. Even if you are, you know, starting your own company, there are parts of it that you just have to understand. You're going to have to shift. You're going to have to evolve. You're going to have to do something in a way that's different than maybe you thought about it before. And so having that person who has that objectivity and the experience that they just have seen it before in multiple iterations, it's just valuable. It's just, there's no price you can put on it.
Yeah. Well, and what I love, you know, so I love seeing people partake of the mentor protege relationship. I think what is really cool is if you're serving as a mentor, which I'm sure you do on a regular basis, it's an instance where you're reaching behind you to pull the next generation forward so that it's easier for the next generation to come, because the things that you have experienced, you can save them from that, right? So I just think it's a truly beautiful thing. And I love that you are a proponent of that. So thank you. So let's talk. Our topic of today is diversity and inclusion at work. And I'm going to give you a little bit of latitude. And I want to hear, what would you like, Denise Hamilton, what would you like to tell us about diversity and inclusion at work today?
Oh, what a great question. It's hard.
Yeah.
That's what I want to tell us. I want to tell us that it is hard. It is not easy. It is not just add water. There are no instant solutions. You're going to have to roll up your sleeves. You're going to have to gird your loins and step into the battle, step into the fray, right? I think of our journey and how we handle diversity and inclusion is like meeting a group of people in a camping store, and they're planning to go on a simple trip. And you say, hey, I got a better idea. Come with me on this trip. And they don't realize that they're climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah.
The tools that they had might have been great for that camping trip, you know, down the street, but they are not the tools that you need to climb up that big mountain. And I think all too often we approach these problems like they're not problems. Like if we just say wonderful bumper sticker statements and we just express our intentions, that it will all be okay. And the truth of the matter is, it takes real work. It takes real sacrifice. It takes real commitment. It takes real decision-making, right? And I think that there's something empowering about counting the cost of the journey and really preparing yourself for that journey in a way that makes sense. Because the thing that's really challenging, I mean, look at the statistics we're seeing coming out of 2020, for women, how many women were just left the workplace? I mean, God, it's unbelievable.
Out of necessity. They were all of a sudden charged with virtual schooling. They were all of a sudden, you know, dealing with businesses that were dealing with significant revenue loss. Women have been disproportionately left behind due to the pandemic for a myriad of societal reasons.
Right.
And so, you know, asking it's kind of like that seven whys situation. Like anytime you're presented with a problem, you keep asking why until you get to the actual root of the problem. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, when it comes to representation and women in the workplace,
There are so many. And then we name the problems. Even if we get to that space that the problem is named, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
How are we, like when it came to performance appraisal time, did we assess women with children that have that virtual school responsibility differently than we did other people? Like there are places that we have to make some decisions as a society. Are we gonna change this or solve this problem, or aren't we? So 5 years from now, 10 years from now, our pipeline for the C-suite, it's smaller than it's ever been.
Right.
Modern history, because all of these women left the workplace. Are we going to create an on-ramp for them to come back in? Are we going to support women who had this incredible responsibility and figure out ways to graft them back up into the pipeline for leadership? How are we going to handle that with men who didn't have that challenge? How are we going to process issues of fairness and equity? Like, these are hard discussions. And the truth of the matter is, we don't like hard discussions. We really want to just sit around and talk about Martin Luther King and say, wasn't Ruth Bader Ginsburg great? Right? Like these are great, but platitudes won't get us, you know, the movement and the success that we really need to get. These are challenging problems that we have got to get commitment around executing.
Yeah. Well, and I think that like what you're talking about is something that we talk about at Innovate Her KC frequently. Like, you have to get comfortable with discomfort. When we're talking about those hard situations, the reason that they're hard is because often we are deeply uncomfortable talking about issues of equity and race and gender. I think that we would prefer, most people would prefer to think that we're above that. We're past that. We had a Black president. We are in a post-racial society. We are in a post-gendered society. And the fact is, you know, we may want to believe that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you is, how do we get comfortable with discomfort around these issues? I'm sure it's something that you deal with every day.
We don't. Discomfort is a part of this journey.
Yeah.
It's baked in. It's like, if I can only lift 10 pounds and I want to get to the point that I can do 50, I have to push myself out of my comfort zone every day.
Yeah.
Every day. It has to become a part of the journey. We are looking for ways for this journey and this effort to be easier, more comfortable, more relaxed, more. And it's just not. It's always going to be hard. It's going to be hard because you can't be like intentionally exclusive for hundreds of years and then be accidentally inclusive.
Right.
It's going to take a Herculean effort to move some of these needles. Just think how positively people thought things were going.
Yeah.
Right? People felt like, oh, like you said, we had a Black president. Things are going great. It's progress. Until the pandemic hit and you saw who actually died.
Right.
You saw who actually lost their jobs. Well, wait a minute. So maybe we're not doing as well as we thought we were. Right. And that's the challenge. That's what we have to figure out. We have to understand that, you know, there's a danger even in measurement. When you measure things that are convenient for you to measure instead of the actual thing. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and so sometimes we're like, oh, we did the Noah's Ark. We have two of each kind. Yay.
Or that magic 25% that
you
heard.
Yes.
There's this statistic out there that if you want to create actual culture change within your organization, at the equity level, you need to have at least 25% representation of whichever group you're trying to bring into your culture inclusively. And so that could be people of color, women of color, women, the disabled, you know, whatever community you're talking about, you need to see at least 25% to not just tokenize, but to create actual cultural change within an organization. And I hear that statistic and it makes me laugh because I'm like, 25% is bullshit. That's not enough.
Right. Right. I think we're about 72% of the population, but if we can get 25%, we're doing great.
Right. You know, I get the statistic. I mean, women comprise 51% of the population. Why do we not see 50%, at least 50% representation in most positions of leadership and in most sectors? We kind of hover around 23 to 25% in so many different industries and areas that the disparity is jarring. I hate it. I'm going to redirect us a little bit. You ready?
Yeah, ready.
Okay, so here's the question. In the work that you do, if you were to create the perfect environment for women, people of color, you know, gay folks, like if you were to create the perfect working environment for marginalized people who belong to marginalized communities, what would that look like?
That's a great question.
Like, what's the end goal?
I think that I wouldn't create it.
Okay.
I think that it would be the co-creation. It would be that process, that lab of what do you need? How do we co-create a place that we can all thrive?
Yeah.
What would that look like? It's more, even more presumptuous for me to say what that would look like as it is for a white male to say what that would look like. Or for, like, I think the point is we need a place where everyone has the chance to bring their best self to work.
Yeah.
Right. And so how do we do that? How do we eliminate bias from these systems? How do we challenge the assumptions that undergird it? Right. Like, how do we truly make things fair and equitable? In a way that my C student goes as far as your C student. That to me is, don't show me the outliers of the Oprah and the Barack Obama. Show me, you know, my George Bush, my the C students that can thrive and excel and do amazing things. Like that's what I'm more interested in. So how do we get out of thinking about the margins and make it a really pleasurable experience for the people in the middle, which is the vast, vast throng of people? And that's all people. I spend a lot of time talking to white employees, white male employees, about how do we kind of shift the narrative from a punitive one to one of celebration and opportunity and extracting strengths and thinking of this as a positive initiative instead of this like compelling thing that they're being made to do and it's a punishment. It's not a punishment to get better. It's an opportunity. So how do we share that message powerfully so that it's optimistic, not this space of looking at it as some kind of punishment, right? If I had 100 employees in my organization, I want them to be rock stars. And if they're rock stars, I sure want to make sure I get that value out of them. And if there's something that's happening in our organization that leads people to not bring their best to this space, let's fix that so that we can be even better than we were before. That's how I think about it.
Yeah. Well, I love that. But now I'm going to ask you to get more specific. I'm going to ask you to get tactical. Yeah. So earlier you referenced, you know, if you were climbing a mountain, what tools would you need to climb that mountain? And so, and you've talked about the tools in your toolbox. So I'm going to ask you now, when you are working with organizations and with people to create an inclusive and a truly inclusive workforce or workplace, what are the tools in your toolbox?
The biggest tool is listening. Ask them. Ask them how they're feeling. Ask them what would be more helpful. You know, like, for example, I used to work in commercial real estate. And there was a landlord that would give a prize to high-performing brokers. It was a custom-made dress shirt. Is that a prize? I'm pretty sure that's not a prize. That's not a prize to me. So you built this prize and it never occurred to you that a woman would win.
Right.
Right. Or another company had a dove hunting trip. That was a 24-hour trip. They would take you by private jet. You would go hunting for doves in the lodge and they'd bring you back the next day. Yeah, shoot me in the head right now. No desire, not interested, don't want to go. Right?
And honestly, like, is that because you're a woman or is that because, like, sometimes people just don't like hunting?
Those are fine activities. No criticism of that. But you built it and did you listen to the audience? Did it ever occur to you that there would be diversity among the people that would be benefiting from it, right? Very often we create things and, you know, it's almost like we've bastardized the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And we translated that into treat them the way you want to be treated. No. Treat them the way you would want to be treated. You would want to be respected. You'd want your differences to be taken into account. You would want to be sure that you were thought of, right? So let's start with just regular old listening. Listening.
I think listening, not only listening, but listening without ego or agenda.
Yes.
Like listening to actually hear, because I think that that's one of the things that I've experienced. Like, I can tell you about my experience, but if you are not receptive to it, if you don't believe me, and if you're not ready to create actionable change because of it, that actually becomes a detriment to me in this journey, because I'm resentful and I'm frustrated that I'm kind of screaming into the void, you know, trying to share my experience and my thoughts. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't matter. It's my time.
Don't substitute your avatar of my experience for me telling you what my experience is.
Exactly.
How I look at that Me Too discussion. So now I can't mentor because I'm afraid of being Me Too'd, right? Yeah. So let me get this straight. Like, you understand that there's a problem.
Right.
And I understand you have responsibility to that problem. But the first excuse that you can grab to not contribute to the solution, you're going to take it.
Right. Well, and the solution is when you have a female protege or when you're in spaces with women, like keep your hands to yourself, keep your thoughts to yourself. You know, this is not, it's not rocket science. You know, this is not a difficult thing. This should not be a difficult imposition to maintain professionalism, you know?
Don't be, so in other words, don't be rapey.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be cringy. Don't be that person. I mean, girl or guy, don't be that person. Really quickly, I do have to break in here, and I just want to give some love to our episode sponsor, Full Scale. We love Full Scale a lot. They're amazing. If you are looking to build a software team quickly and affordably, they are the way to do it. And of course, working with the Full Scale team through the Startup Hustle podcast, it is a dream. I mean, it's so easy for us, and we love them so much. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you, Full Scale. You're amazing. And now we're gonna pop back into the conversation at hand. I'm having so much fun with this. It's stupid. So talk to us. So you say, like, you need to listen. And you need to be ready to hear. What are some other tactical things? Because I really want our listeners at home. We talked a little bit about this when we were kind of in our pre-episode chat. The fact that I think we're both probably approached by individuals who are like, how can I make my workplace more diverse and inclusive? Actually, I'm going to ask that question second. First question that I have, because we haven't actually addressed this yet, what is the difference between diversity and inclusion?
Well, I mean, diversity is having variety of people, right? It's having difference. Inclusion, though, is really what the goal is. Inclusion is creating a space where everyone's giftedness is fully valued and extracted. Inclusion can be, obviously, we talk about it in terms of race and gender, but also it's having a conversation and all the extroverts are talking like a, you know, a whirligig and saying, wait, Terry, what did you have to add? Because you know that they're an introvert. It's making sure you're getting the best out of everyone and you're making room for everyone. And that inclusion piece is a lot harder, but that to me is the holy grail of creating space and opportunity so that people can be fully grafted in. There's no line of delineation of worth or value. Everyone has the ability to contribute their genius to the space and we all thrive together. That inclusive holy grail is what I'm always looking for.
I love that. So once upon a time, this kind of stuck with me, and I love this because I just think it's a great analogy. But somebody told me that diversity is inviting everyone to the party. Inclusion is asking them to dance.
Yes.
Really. And I thought that was just such a cool way of putting it. I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Interesting because it's Black History Month right now. I've been approached to be on tons of stages and will you come and speak and will you participate and will you, and I had this amazing conversation with a friend that was asking me like, how should we celebrate Black History Month? I said, wouldn't it be great to get all of the white leaders in your organization to have a conversation of how Black leaders have influenced them? Black mentors, Black teachers, Black, the people that have been influential, because that, there you go again, right? There's diversity. There's all kinds of people. And there's inclusion. People of different races and colors get to inform who I am and how I am.
Yeah.
What a beautiful expression of appreciation of Black History Month, right? Yeah. And so I think being thoughtful, being really creative, and honoring different cultures and not in a caricature way, in an authentic way that you're spending the time trying to really get to know people from different walks of life.
Yeah. I love that. And honestly, like we in Innovate Her KC, we were like, how do we honor the women of color within our community for Black History Month? And one of the things that kind of came out of that discussion is really one of the things that we want to do organizationally, and I'm sure one of the things that you'd like to see, is how do we honor these lives and this history all year long? February is the shortest month, and I think that the achievement and the things that Black leaders and individuals have achieved for our country over the course of our history. Like, Black history is human history. So why are we talking about it all year long? You know? So we actually kind of started the conversation there, and it was just really interesting. Some of the things, you know, buy Black, you know, read thought pieces and books and articles written by, you know, by Black people, and share and promote that work. And, you know, how can we honor these contributions beyond Black History Month, that 1 month of a year? Yeah. So we actually went off on a little bit of a tangent there. But my next question, when we kind of started talking about diversity and inclusion, my next question was going to be, what are some very practical things that people who are looking to encourage and foster diversity and inclusion within their workforce, what are some things that they can do? Like, we started with listening. That's huge. That's number one. But what are some other things that we need to be talking about and things that we need to be doing?
I think we need to release the sacred cows. Everything is up for evaluation.
Yeah.
Everything is up for scrutiny. Where do you get your interns?
Yeah.
What weight do you give internships to when you're hiring for your organization? I always think that's fun. So, you know, you're going through applicants and you're like, oh, she had this great, sexy internship at Google, or he had this great internship at Lockheed Martin. But what, like, how many people got an internship because their mom or dad made a call?
Right.
Right. And so let's be honest about the systemic things that we do that aren't really indicators of success almost at all. Right. Mm-hmm. And let's challenge ourselves to find those true indicators of what potential is. And that takes real work. That takes releasing some of our sacred cows about how we do things. Well, I love getting people from my alma mater. Guess what? You're getting all the same kinds of people, all the same kinds of condition. And that's what you love, right? You love the ease and the familiarity and the shorthand. Right. Familiarity is easier. You know, it's homogeneity is the easiest thing in the world, right? If you have a cultural shorthand, what might take me in 100 words to get across to you, somebody else can get across to you in 5. It's like, name that tune. That's who you want to be on your team. But you're going to miss out on the richness of that diversity of thought and experience and perspective and the richness of that if you kind of settle for that homogeneity, right? Yeah. Homogeneous groups make faster decisions, and they're happier with them.
Right.
Really tempting. I didn't say they were the right decision.
Yeah.
But they made them faster and they were happier. That's a hard thing to give up for the right decision.
Yeah.
That's the trade-off. And we have to be willing to give that up and understand that. Understand that there's some things I'm going to have to stop doing. There's some cultural things I'm going to have to shift. Some processes I'm going to have to release. What am I reading? Who am I talking to? Am I benchmarking other organizations and what they're doing? Am I listening to thought leaders in the space discuss the areas of stuff that I work in that I have to address? Right? Like, you know, I have two influencers, two advertising firms, two social media firms, and they give me two different bids. And I see that the company owned by the man, his bid is 40% more. This woman is undervaluing herself. What am I going to do? Am I just going to kind of take the low bid, or am I going to say, hey, I really would encourage you to revisit your rates. You're way under the rest of the market. That little help can help that woman kind of move to the next space and price her services more accordingly, right? Yeah. So it costs something, right? It costs something. And I think it's really important to kind of identify that really early in the game and just figure out, like, how much you're willing to pay, that looks like. Allyship costs.
It really does. And when you were talking about homogeneity, like, I evolutionarily speaking, humans tend to gravitate toward and love working with and being around people who look, think, and act like them, because our caveman brain says these are the people who are less likely to kill us and eat us, basically. Yep. Take our resources. And so you almost have to position yourself. You have to use your giant human brain, not your Neanderthal reptilian brain, instinctive brain, to do the extra work. Like, you know, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording as well. Like, the fact is, true inclusion, true diversity and inclusion, it almost always requires more words, more work, more resources, and more money. So if you are truly, truly committed to equity and to promoting fairness and promoting growth and you know, people in marginalized communities, you have to be ready for that. You have to be prepared to put in more work. Like, it's just, it's never going to be easy.
Well, I'll add to that, like, yeah, we do that in every other place. If yeah. I'm having a challenge with safety in my organization, I would do what I had to do. I would pay who I had to pay. I would buy whatever materials, whatever tools, whatever. I would invest, because I understand not practicing safety has a cost as well. It's not like if you don't do this cost, you're going to save money. You're not saving money. Market has a cost. But if you don't market your business, it's not going to have a return. Like, this isn't an alien concept, right? So this is a space where we have to invest. It's just like any other business element.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't remember the exact statistic, but there is a statistic out there that that organizations that have diverse leadership on their leadership teams, they perform better. And so really, like, when you're talking about this kind of investment, you're seeing a return on investment. And I can only imagine it's because when you have diverse leadership, you get more opinions and you get more context and you get more information when you are making strategic decisions. And that's only a thing, right?
And you make less boneheaded decisions, to be honest.
Right. Like, you're saving yourself that down the line, because at some point somebody is going to look at that custom dress shirt and they're going to say, hey, that's a bad idea.
I know it's a bad idea in the boardroom than on the sales floor, right? Yeah. It's just 101. Like, you want all the information you can glean to make the best possible decisions. And so this is not a question of, yeah, it costs a lot. But that, it's, you're investing. It's an investment in having higher returns, better relationship with among your team, better relationship with the community, better relationship with your customers. Like, it's just, the return is tenfold. But we gotta be able to drop that money in the budget, in the line item, and spend the money to get the return on that investment for your organization and for the culture. Yeah. You know, these days, Gen Z is not playing. They're looking at companies and they're determining, like, are you real? Are you serious? Are you going to be able to be a place that I want to invest my energy to grow this career? And unfortunately, a lot of people are getting the answer no, right? So you avoid this at your peril.
Right. Absolutely true. Like, if it's not because it's the right thing to do, then at the very least do it because ultimately it's going to help your bottom line. You know, it's a good business. It's good business.
Good business.
So let me ask you this. If you could, I'm going to ask you to do the impossible.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you to condense everything that you're all about, which I love, clearly. Mm-hmm. This has been amazing. But I'm going to ask you to condense down and distill your advice. If you could give one, maybe two pieces of advice to the folks at home for how to best proceed in fostering and supporting, you know, marginalized communities at the workplace. What do you think that would be?
Commit to unlearning.
Ooh, that was beautiful. What do you mean by that?
I think that we approach the world thinking we're really smart and really experienced and really exposed and we know all the things. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we have to acknowledge is that we don't know. There's a ton we don't know. And so sometimes the most well-intended people can cause the most harm because they're not committed to that process of unlearning what their assumptions are. Don't operate in your assumption. Find the courage to ask, to interrogate your decision-making processes. Find the courage to challenge how you've always done it. You know, like, a perfect example is if your kids are in a ballet troupe, right? And before the recital, they say all the little girls have to put their hair in a tight, severe bun.
Yeah.
Think how many little girls don't dance because their hair can't go in that tight, severe little bun.
Right.
I mean, like, when you really think about it, what's the cost of our way of doing things?
Right.
You challenge yourself to think like that. Who does this exclude? Who has a chance to be here? And as you're sitting there, as you're the person that's lucky enough to be in that space, examine and challenge the ways that others are not allowed into that space.
Yeah.
My goodness, if people did that, and everybody just found five or six places in their actual day-to-day lives where they could make that change, like, the world would change tomorrow. I really believe that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. yeah. Well, and so like another thing that I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and it actually doesn't have to do with business, but I'm sure there are some business applications. But when we're talking about things like privilege, and we're talking about so Zoom has become a thing. And so one of the things that I've been talking a lot with some members is about schooling and virtual school and how difficult it is to get the kids engaged. And so you have many educators and parents who are like, turn on your camera. And the fact is, like, you can't necessarily make that blanket ask because you don't know what kids are experiencing in their home environment, and you don't know if they have things that they might not necessarily want to share. And so, I mean, it's just kind of like thinking about the problem from with a new lens.
Right. Like,
yeah. So I just 100% agreement. Like, honestly, everything you've said, I just want to like, oh, yes, amazing. So I love it. But we are coming up on time. So I'm going to ask you the human question.
Mm.
Here it comes. Are you ready?
Ready. I'm so ready.
I cannot wait for this answer. Okay. I thought of it as soon as the episode started and I was like, oh, I can't wait to get to this question. So who are your heroes?
I have so many, but I will pick the corniest one. And the corny one, the most corniest one. I got two.
Okay. Let's hear it.
The corny one is my mom.
That's not corny. That's adorable.
Came from, brought us here from Jamaica in the middle of the winter. As you can, I can't even imagine moving to New York City in the middle of the winter. Sounds like torture. If you've always lived in a tropical country. And, you know, she's got a high school diploma and she put herself through beauty school so she can make money on the side of being a telephone operator, and she can make wedding cakes. And she did every job. Like, in a way, it's like my childhood is defined by her not being there more than her being there. And for me, that sacrifice of missing the fun times because she was building something, right? Building something so that I could be sitting in my fancy schmancy house on my fancy laptop being interviewed. Like, I see the through line of that deferred gratification and that sacrifice.
Yeah.
And I want to be the kind of person that invests and creates opportunity for other people that are willing to kind of pay that price.
Yeah.
Right? And to, and, you know, as I think about her example, I think about like the work that I do even today of how many people didn't think about a woman getting off shift at 2 o'clock in the morning and having to take the subway home and then walk home in a dangerous neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, nobody thought about that. Like, nobody cared the experience that she had as a single mom in a dangerous city with a weird schedule job. And I think that there's a little piece of that I bring to my work even today of who does this hurt? Every decision, who does this hurt? Who does this impact adversely that maybe we're not thinking about? How do we find that person and try to solve for it? Right. You can't always solve for it, but that we try. The other—
But you can think from that perspective. And I think that's corny. I think that's lovely.
my obvious person is Oprah. For all the great reasons. I mean, talk show, blah, 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 wonderful. But really for starting her network, right? What a powerful message. You are at the top of your game. Everybody knows you in a certain light, in a certain way, and they put you in a box. And I learned so much in watching how quickly people turned on her when she, like as great as she was, how dare you try to start a network? Who do you think you are? You know, and stumbling. Do you know how hard it is to be a beginner when you're at the top of the game to shift into something new? That to me is why I love entrepreneurs. I love startup culture. I love the energy of allowing yourself to be a beginner. You're an expert in this. Move over here and start something new and challenging and exciting. That's what Oprah represents to me. Somebody who was great, top of the food chain, that allowed herself to be a beginner again so that she could build something else. Like, I want to be that kind of person that's not afraid to say, oh, I don't know. That's not afraid to stumble. That's not afraid to start at a C. In our culture today, everybody wants to start at an A. You don't start at an A. You start at a D minus, a C, you work your way up to a B minus, B plus. Like, it's a journey. And I just believe that was so courageous to, in front of everyone, give up your spot to step down so that you could really step up. And I always want to be that kind of person.
Amazing. I love that so much. Well, I have to tell you, Denise, thank you so much for your time today. Like, I knew that honestly, I get like the most pleasure of these kinds of interviews, and it's not even fair because like people are like, it's a job. And I'm like, no, this was amazing. It's fun I've had all day. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a great conversation.
Yeah. And thank you, listeners, for taking the time to spend a little bit of time with us this afternoon. We do appreciate you. We also appreciate our episode sponsor. Fullscale.io can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. And this is Lauren Conaway with Innovate Her KC and the Startup Hustle Podcast. We will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.